Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:08 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 25th. I thought we'd kick off today with Palladium. It rallied $400. And that is looking pretty extreme. And it has successfully now unwound about half of the decline, having halved from 2,800 to 1,400. It's back up towards the 2,200 level. So this is a natural area where people might start to ask the question, okay, yes, it was very oversold. Now it's unwound half the decline. It's certainly not as oversold any longer. Are we really going to see demand for new vehicles start to recover to previous levels in the very short term? That's obviously a big question. It's going to be very much open to question in places like China, in Europe, and in the USA. So, and Japan for that matter. So one would have to question whether there is going to be continued supply shortages of palladium. And considering where the majority of palladium comes from, well, some is in South Africa, some is in, and the majority comes from Russia. How many palladium mines in Russia are going to have to close down as a result of the coronavirus? I would have to think probably not that many. So it would probably suggest that palladium is unlikely to rally very much beyond where it just has. Now, when we think about silver, it has also extended its rally. It still has a good measure to unwind even half of the decline. So there is still scope here for some additional upside. But I think when we look at just short-term oscillators, there is very deep oversold conditions, and we've come nowhere close to unwinding those just yet. So there is still potential for an additional rally, but it's not nearly as oversold as it was. So obviously we could have some consolidation. Platinum prices were also in positive territory in here today and continue to extend the rebound. It's by far the cheapest on a relative basis of all the precious metals. So it was at bargain basement prices at the end of last week, and we're just having an unwinding of that. $1,000 has been an area of resistance for really quite a prolonged period of time. And until it can sustain a move back above the $1,000 level, well, we won't be able to really confirm that it's back in a demand-dominated environment beyond short-term considerations. But it certainly has an awfully wide overextension to or oversold condition to unwind, and it's still less than 1 week on the upside. Gold shares have also been doing better, and are now have almost completely unwound the decline. I continue to think that the sector is undervalued. The collapse in oil prices is certainly something that is going to bolster the ability of these companies to mine profitably. Oil prices themselves are very oversold and haven't gone anywhere now for the last six sessions. So we have a low of at least near-term significance. Nothing yet in the way of upper dynamics, but certainly prices are very depressed, and it's going to put higher cost manufacturers under a great deal of stress. But in the meantime, the gold mining sector in particular is going to benefit enormously from lower energy prices. The longer that that is sustained, the better it is for those miners. There is a substantial number of them have got all-in sustaining costs anywhere in the region of $850 to about $1,000, and gold is trading a lot closer to $1,600. So not only are they benefiting from low energy prices, but from high absolute prices. And of course, gold is appreciating in lots of different currencies. So particularly so when we look at the Australian dollar, where the Aussie dollar has been under a great deal of stress, then that is bolstering the ability of Australian miners to also benefit. But particularly so for their gold miners, because they are in a favorable position of having strong product prices, whereas a lot of industrial resources have been under a great deal of pressure. Now, Newcrest Mining has pulled back a fair amount over the course of the last 6 months, and not least because they had some issues with production. But it does look like we have a low of near-term significance. Sibanye-Stillwater has changed their ticker, that is following the successful merger of with Stillwater, so that boosted their palladium pricing or their palladium production. Now the share pulled back violently right along with the palladium price, and subsequently has rebounded. It's up 50% in the last week, and this has been a share which has been subject to an enormous amount of volatility. It pulled back violently because the management team have announced that they are intent on continuing with their mergers and acquisitions program. They've been probably the most aggressive of all gold and precious metal miners in taking over other mines in the course of the last 4 years. And that contributed to the massive decline from the peak in 2016 down to the lows in 2018, and it has also contributed to the severity of the decline we've had just recently. Then, of course, there are going to be gold miners which are concentrating on returning to dividend-paying status in a more sustainable fashion. Newmont Mining has got a very admirable dividend growth rate because they've tied their dividend to free cash flows. And free cash flows was the Achilles heel of the mining sector in the last bull market. They just didn't have any because they were spending every addition or available dollar on speculating on greenfield sites and trying to renew. This thing rather interesting is when we look at buybacks. I took the constituents of the Buyback Achievers ETF in here today and pulled down data like free cash flow and free cash flow yield. Now, a number of these companies, they don't pay dividends any longer, but they are running on really very tight budgets, and a number of the shares that are included in the Buyback Achievers ETF are rather small, or they are heavily levered. So, for example, Apollo Investment is one of the bigger private equity companies, and they have announced that they're going to be investing more money in some of the in some of their own partner companies, which are in the leisure sector or the tourism sector. I think there's some rationale for that, and certainly their share price has pulled back very sharply in response to the extreme difficulty that the tourist sector is under. But it was unable to hold on to its rally in here today, and they are short of cash. So one thing that we can pretty much anticipate is that they're going to be out there borrowing more money. They're also going to be looking at taking on additional loans, and that is going to be plowed into trying to buy things at reasonable valuations. Obviously, that's a longer-term strategy, which is probably going to be better for the newer participants, but it hasn't been a particularly good investment for any of the investors since their IPO. In fact, they IPO'd at, I suppose, the very best time, well in advance of let's just get all the back history. They IPO'd well in advance of the mortgage crisis, and since then it has been extraordinarily difficult to make any money from them. Then the question is whether they're going to be able to sustain that dividend. They haven't grown the dividend in a substantial amount of time, and it's currently yielding 23%. It's quite likely that they are going to have to cut the dividend, but then they may also have to cut their buyback program. There are going to be a substantial number of companies that will have to shelve their buyback programs. That's going to be particularly true in the financial sector. Banks haven't been able to raise dividends, but they have been buying back their shares. Now, the banking sector has rebounded over the last couple of days, but has not been able to hold on to the rally. There are obviously big questions about whether banks can, in fact, make money in this environment when interest rates are zero, and they are already constrained with liquidity concerns. The TED spread, which is a measure of liquidity in the banking sector, has surged higher, and perhaps more importantly, it has not contracted over the course of the last couple of days. Now, we are still substantially below some of the peaks put in 2006 and 7, but it is also at highs that we haven't seen since that period. So that at least suggests that there is a clear potential here that we are going to have tightness in the credit markets for a fairly substantial amount of time. Now, when we look at the performance of the buybacks index, it pulled back by more than the market, and it has bounced right along with everything else. But there is no reason to expect that it is going to continue to bounce, because at least 18% of its constituents are trading with negative free cash flow, and they've got negative free cash flow yields. So that suggests that they've been borrowing to fund their buyback programs. Even companies like Apple had been borrowing to pay back, or excuse me, to buy back their shares. That was particularly true ahead of the Trump tax cuts. They had been issuing euro-denominated debt, then repatriating the proceeds and buying back their shares with that money. That was their one of the primary methods that they'd been used to avoid corporation tax. So we know that Apple has been engaged in this same kind of financial two-step, and then also borrowing money at very low levels and engaging in this financialization of balance sheets. This is obviously going to have going to represent a problem for some of the most over-levered companies. And I think that is where some of the biggest risks reside. Investment-grade bonds continue to rebound, and there's no reason to expect that they won't continue to rebound. The Fed, after all, is buying them. So that is obviously a clear tailwind. Then we have high-yield bonds, and they have also rallied. But the big question is, what are companies going to have to do in order to hold on to that investment-grade rating? That's, I think, the big question that has not been answered, and it's something that we do need to consider as a short covering rally takes place. When we think about the performance of the S&P 500, then it has rebounded, but is not able to hold on to all of the advance in here today. The question outstanding is simple enough. There's a lot of liquidity coming through. It is primarily aimed at the bigger companies. Those bigger companies, if they take the assistance, are then not going to be able to buy back their shares for at least a year after they finish paying back the money. Well, again, if we go back and look at the Excel sheet and simply think about some of the airlines. When we think, for example, of any one of the airlines like JetBlue or Southwest or Delta or United, then what we're presented with are companies that have got rather constrained balance sheets. American Airlines has rallied over the course of the last 24 hours. It was up another $1.50 in here today, which is approximately 10%. But the balance sheet is an absolute mess. They've had negative free cash flow for the last 3 years in a row. And the only thing that's been sustaining the company's share price has been the buyback program. And they're not going to be able to buy back their shares if they take the government's money, and they're not going to survive unless they take the government's money. So that's obviously a catch-22 in terms of the share's performance. And it was already a badly performing share in the first place. It's a very similar situation for United. So these are going to be difficult environments. Now, one of the things with United is that they do have positive free cash flow. So not quite the same as the fate of American Airlines. But they're not going to be able to buy back their shares if they take any assistance. And they're almost certainly going to have to take assistance from the government. So we may see the share stabilize. The company will not go bust if they take assistance from the government. So that's a positive. But it could be years before they get to buy back their shares again. So it is one of the least loved of all of the American airlines. And that focus on trying to boost the profit rather than any kind of service is potentially going to save the company, but it's unlikely to be one of the better performers. These are the kinds of dilemmas that are going to be priced into the market. There are obviously catch-22s with a lot of the assistance that's being offered. Boeing has said that it will refuse government assistance if the government wants an equity stake in the business. They're almost certainly going to have to take assistance, however, because they can't seem to keep their planes in the sky. They are missing their rendezvous when trying to launch rockets to the International Space Station. These are obviously problems for a company that's supposed to be an engineering powerhouse. And now the question is, having rallied more than 50% in the space of three sessions, how much further is it going to go before people start really answering some of these outstanding questions? Now, rather than focusing on all the companies that are in the biggest trouble, let's then think about the NASDAQ. It has also pulled back. It is still substantially above its 2018 lows. The 1,000-day moving average is now right in the region of where the market has begun to find support. Just about all the other major indices are below their respective 1,000-day moving averages, but it wasn't able to hold on to its advance in here today. Now, when we look at the better performers in the market in here today, it was some of the most oversold shares, so we definitely have evidence of people trying to buy the dip in things like United and American and Bookings.com, or Marriott Hotels for that matter. What is also worth considering is that a number of the biotechnology companies were in negative territory, and so was Netflix. So some of the biggest beneficiaries of the virus scare were in negative territory today. So there was some unwinding or rotation out of the better performers into the worst performers, at least some evidence of that. Then when we look at the mega cap shares, the NYSE FANG index has been steadying in the region of the trend mean, but was in negative territory in here today. I do think that there is potential for some pause of consolidation, for the unwinding of oversold conditions, but we are in a difficult environment where there just is this impending problem with rising cases. The good news is that Italy's number of fatalities has declined for a second day in a row, and in fact it was down yesterday, and it's down again today, so this is positive. It's suggesting that they are starting to get on top of the challenge after an incredibly traumatic period. That would suggest that we're probably a week away from a similar phenomenon in Spain. We're not there yet in France or in the UK, so those are impending problems. And then we're still seeing rising cases in the USA. And of course, the data is imperfect because of the lack of testing equipment. So certainly California has been trying to get ready, and they've had a lockdown in place now for about a week, and we do not yet know whether that is going to be successful in moderating the influence of the outbreak. I think one consideration that is worth making is that some of the places that have been most badly affected by the coronavirus are also some of the most densely populated, and that includes New York and the city of San Francisco. Much of the rest of the USA is much less densely populated, so that could be a mitigating factor, although that's a hypothesis rather than being proved. One thing is that we are likely to be in a rather difficult economic environment for a number of businesses for at least the next quarter. But once we see a peak coming through in the number of cases, then that is likely to be beneficial. And that, I think, will start to separate out the companies that are going to benefit from this situation. I think that, considering the quantity of money that is being provided, that high growth and technology-related innovation are likely to continue to be some of the better performers. The gold sector is likely to benefit from the worries that people have about the devaluation of fiat currencies. When we look at the bond markets, then we have clear evidence that yields have started to improve somewhat. We've had a great deal of volatility over the course of the last while. We're getting an unwinding of the overextension right now. But the big question is whether the bond market will continue to have patience with governments continuing to expand their fiscal deficits. Eventually, that is going to cause a problem. All of this spending will eventually have to be paid for. As long as central bank balance sheets are expanding, then and central banks are buying the bonds, then that will help to maintain some form of market stability. One factor has been that in the size of aggregate central bank balance sheets, when rebased into US dollars, then the figure is rising. But it is not rising nearly as quickly as it might do, and that's because of the strength of the US dollar. That dollar liquidity issue, which is evident in the TED spread, has been one of the major factors in the rally that we've had in the dollar over the course of the last 2 weeks. Now, as stock markets unwind their short-term oversold conditions, then the dollar is unwinding its overbought condition. The question is whether it is going to sustain a move back below the 100 to 99 area. If it does that, then that is likely to help to suggest that we have a low of more than short-term significance in the stock market. And it would also help to, I think, reduce some of the dollar funding issues that we have in the wider markets. Now, when we look internationally, the FTSE 100 is deeply oversold, pulled back by in excess of 40%, and has started to rally two pretty solid days on the upside. Considering the weak close, however, on Wall Street, then we may get some consolidation in here today. One thing that is certainly starting to become apparent is that Associated British Foods' big retail arm, Primark, has said that it is going to stop paying rents on its commercial leases, and that is going to ram home to the commercial real estate sector just how much peril they're in. Well, the stock was in positive territory today, but that news announcement was made after the close. It will be a real picture for how investors are willing to take that kind of news to see how retailers perform tomorrow, because the commercial real estate sector is under rather extraordinary duress. Now, there is a great deal of commentary going on now about the mortgage sector and mortgage REITs in particular, and a number have been talking about not being able to meet margin calls. So there is a great deal of stress in that environment, and the fact that the Federal Reserve, instead of selling mortgage bonds, is now buying them again is very substantial support for the market. But it's primarily residential mortgages the Fed is buying, not commercial mortgages. And that does represent a rather significant issue because commercial real estate is extraordinarily expensive, and if tenants are not paying their rent, well, that is going to have a significant knock-on effect on the mortgages for those commercial units, which is obviously going to feed back into the banking sector. So this does represent a challenge. Now, when we look at the wider European markets, we've certainly had these extraordinary declines. We've had these almost identical charts everywhere with these massive reactions against the prevailing uptrends, type 2 topping characteristics. But they've gone so far so fast that the type 2 top has turned into a massive acceleration on the downside. We're now just starting to get some short covering, but even in Australia, where the market has been up, I think rather impressively now, 2 days in a row, it hasn't quite yet broken the downtrend. And that is despite the fact that the Australian dollar has been particularly weak, but that also has been rallying over the course of the last 2 days. The issue here is that we are due some consolidation. We're due an unwinding of the oversold conditions. The size of the assistance that is being provided almost universally by central banks and governments is tantamount to synchronized global monetary and fiscal stimulus, and that will gain traction eventually. The bigger question, though, is that the rewards are unlikely to be evenly distributed. There are going to be some clear winners and losers, and certainly those that are most reliant on social interaction that have been already damaged by the retail apocalypse, and those are probably the sectors that are going to be most heavily influenced on the negative side. Whereas those that are providing cloud infrastructure, that have been providing the kind of productivity gains that were necessary to thrive in the evolving environment before the coronavirus, well, they're going to benefit even more. And obviously, then the companies that rely most heavily on access to liquidity, well, those are also going to benefit from the quantity of money that is being printed. It's then down to what are the private equity firms with almost 2 trillion in dry powder going to deploy their money into? Apollo is certainly talking about putting it into the tourist sector and to the social or the physicality and social aspects of life. And I think that there is at least some rationale for that, except for the fact that prices are still high. One thing that is, I think, worth considering is that high yield spreads have not really been coming down. So while we have had a rally in terms of the ETFs, the spreads themselves have been immune to any kind of pullback. And that, I think, further emphasizes the fact that there is nobody coming to the rescue of the high yield market. And that, I think, is something that is going to have a knock-on effect. There's also nobody coming to the rescue of the small businesses. And ultimately, it is the consumer is employed by small businesses, and the large companies depend on the health of the consumer. So that is something that is also going to be a significant challenge. And we are just not at a point yet where governments have decided to pass forbearance laws, or whether they're going to directly step in and pay mortgages. The one place that has sidestepped forbearance and decided that they're going to pay mortgages is the UK. And the size of the UK's financial package far outweighs the extent of their health package. If the UK had taken the early steps to try and stamp out the virus, they wouldn't have had to embark on such an epic-sized financial package. But that was the past, even though it was only 2 weeks ago. What we're seeing right now is that the pound is rallying. It's up from 115 to almost 120 over the course of the last 2 days. It has fallen precipitously, so there is potential for additional upside, but having been an area of support previously, 120 is now the first area of potential resistance. So it is something, it is, I think, a bit of a Rubicon for the short term. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.